Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And it's not just Tuesday, it's 2024.
Megan, 2024. This is wild.
I know. I'm feeling like 2024 is going to bring some spice. It feels good.
It feels a little bit like a sci-fi movie because, like, when I wrote 2024 this morning, I'm like, it feels like it's in the future. We are currently living in the future. And I think actually a lot of the things we're going to talk about today have to do with futuristic ideas, whether that's about science or devices and things like that. So maybe it's the perfect timing.
Maybe. But I feel like myself in like 2000 would have thought we would have flying cars by now. So I feel like we're in the future, but we're not like as futuristic as my, like, I don't know, my 10-year-old self dreamed of.
Yeah. Flying cars in Boulder, they would have to be created by Subaru.
That's true.
Because there is nothing else on the road other than Subaru cross tracks.
And they would still end up in ditches on the side of the snow-covered roads, just like in the air. They'd be like cratering from the sky.
Yeah. And there'd be like golden retrievers that have little wings because they would evolve very rapidly to go alongside the flying cars.
That's a dream. I think that's heaven. Okay. Yeah. That's not just the future. That's a future, but in heaven.
That's a wet dream.
Yes.
To touch base on last week's episode. So happy 2024, everybody. If you listened to last week's episode, it was a random one. We did something totally different. People loved it for the most part. I'm not sure everyone loved it, but we didn't get any negative feedback. On this episode, we're going to go back to normal. We're going to be talking about science. We're going to be talking about fun things with a little bit of that spice mixed in.
I'm kind of sad to go back to normal. Also, we got a ton of great messages from like things spanning the line of like tampons to scooping. Lots of follow-ups and body fluid. I just like felt the love last week. It was great.
I like to think of somebody that skipped that episode and just heard what we said about it.
Yes.
Whether that makes them more likely or less likely to go back and listen.
Actually, that last statement could just be the summary statement of the podcast episode. I think we called it like the best holiday episode or something.
Yeah.
We could have just put that in. And I wonder what it would have done for listens.
Tampons, scooping, and bodily fluids.
Yes.
That's it.
I mean, it was about, that captured like 50% of it.
Yeah. Well, as we've talked about before, podcast listens depend so heavily on the title. Like whenever we get the extra bump, we're a little lucky relative to most podcasts in that every single episode is kind of similar vibes. So there's probably a core group of listeners that is the same. But that 5 or 10% bumps you get, it's all title based. So maybe the secrets all along was scooping.
Exactly. Yeah, we got to find the future buzzwords for 2024.
Oh, yeah.
We could like predict them. I don't think scooping is going to be those besides the Swap podcast. But you know what? You got to be unique.
It's always training topics that are the big ones. Like Jim Walmsley and Courtney DeWalter, obviously really big. But also Zone 2 is really big. Mm-hmm. Threshold training, Norwegian training. So we just need to start throwing that in anytime. Like if there's ever anyone in Norway that applies any of the principles we're talking about, that is Norwegian training. It does not matter what the topic is.
We should just reference it every podcast episode just to roll with it. But how are you feeling heading into 2024? You just had this great statement, which I loved. So you're walking upstairs to record the podcast and you say, Megan, I feel good, but almost too good. It's a little bit scary. Why do you feel so good?
I don't know. I think part of the reason actually is because I haven't run in a little bit. I hurt my knee just slightly. It'll be okay. We're gonna get to it in a second. And I think those numbers, like my numbers, my resting heart rate, all of that have responded really well to taking a step back. Maybe a good lesson about recovery after things like the 50 miler I did. Sometimes you just need to realize that your body is asking you to turn down the temperature a little bit. So I've done that. My resting heart rate's low. My HRV is high. I'm feeling ready to rock for 2024.
Yeah, I feel like you've turned down the temperature, but turned the spice up to 12. And I like it, actually. I feel like you should bring these vibes every week.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on in my brain right now. It's quite chaotic, but also very fun. So I'm going to bring that to the episode. You look like you're having a great time. You know why?
Why?
Because you have a pimple on your chin, Megan.
I know. You were staring at me before this podcast episode, and I was like, what is going on? Do I have Athletic Greens mustache? And it turns out you really want to pop my pimple.
I want to pop it
like
so bad.
Like a crazed weirdo. You're like, give me your face.
Well, it's a great sign. The reason I wanted to bring it up is because it probably indicates a very positive hormonal context for you. You're going back to 16-year-old.
Yes.
You know, you're in shop class in high school or whatever. And I'm just the weirdo being like, I want to pop that whitehead so badly.
You're a weirdo being like, I want to bang 16-year-old Megan.
No, I do not want to do that. As we talked about last week, I only want to bang Bluey's dad.
Yeah.
That's all. But you never pop pimples is what you said. And I think that's a freakish behavior. I think much more normal. I think 97% of people see any whitehead and are just like, I must pop it. And somehow you resist the urge.
I know. And it's strange because like if there is a lover of like goo and ooze and like strange substances,
you love fluids.
Like, I like really like that stuff.
And cause and effect.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's great. You sit there. It's like painting a whole wall and you get to see the tapestry unfold as soon as you pop this. But someone when I was younger told me that popping pimples scars your face. And so I have never done it, which is shocking because like I feel like the amount I care about like ooze and fluids and like pus and stuff is much higher than the amount that I care about beauty.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, I can't do it.
Yeah.
It feels like a sin.
Well, it's kind of, I remember other things that people said like that. Like, you ever get told that if you pee in the pool, it will turn red?
Yes. Yeah. I still pee in the pool.
You still pee in the pool.
Yeah, I tested that hypothesis many times.
One thing that they tell young boys sometimes is that if you masturbate, you'll go blind.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. I was blind from 12 to 14.
Just 12 to 14?
I did periodized training, is what we're saying. Okay, let's get to the episode.
I'm disappointed. Actually, no, before we get to the episode, I want to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Okay. I'm going to have a vibes-based resolution.
Okay. What's that?
Which is I want to set my PR, my record, for laughing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And that's like a general reminder. We talked about this on the podcast before, but laughing is such a choice as an adult. It's very rarely that like uncontrollable laughing is a part of anyone's life.
Unless I'm around you. You make me uncontrollably laugh.
Sometimes, but sometimes you have to like, I can tell I make a joke. And actually, sometimes I'll make a joke and it'll be like the ones I've already said on the podcast. And you'll just go, oh.
Okay, that's not true. And then I have a much nicer courtesy laugh.
No, I'll be like, Megan, I deserve more than that. Yeah. And then you'll give me a laugh. Yeah.
I'll give you one of those.
So that's what I want to do. How about you? Do you have any resolutions?
I have like a few, but I think the main one is I want to create a lot in 2024. Okay. Like, I don't know, I love the idea of just like being creative and like trying new things. But I think as I do that, I want to do it for me.
Okay.
Like, I really love the fact of just like creating. And I think I want to see what happens when I like have some more of those creative juices flowing for the stuff that I like.
Yeah.
And if other people like it, that's great. If not, there's like tens of thousands of other types of content out there for them. And
yeah,
so I want to create a little more.
Anything specific in the creation front that you're thinking?
TBD, we got to tease it.
Okay.
We got to sizzle it a little bit. Okay. But I have two other New Year's resolutions. Okay. One is just more adventure with Leo, which I think we'll get at baseline. And the third is I want to do a lot of fun things like games and puzzles and video games and movies. And I feel like sometimes I let those things fly by the wayside for work, and I want to go all in on like fun entertainment.
I'm a little bit worried about that last one because last night we were playing a game called Rummy Cube, I think it was called.
Okay, I'm obsessed.
With my parents.
It was Rummy Cube. It's amazing.
My parents are in their 70s. It's like a 70 plus year old game. I think, you know how like games say on them, it's like ages 4+. This one is age 71 plus.
And me, I'm clearly 71 at heart.
But that's my concern, is that you have a problem. So you figured out the game. And your brain was just whirring like a beautiful mind, just equations going back and forth. And then to end the second game, you did this mic drop moment where you moved like 17 cubes and it was just this beautiful equation. And you just start screaming like Michael Jordan hitting the game winning shot in 1998. And I'm like, oh no, there's a problem here, because it activated your competitive spirit. And Megan, when you say do fun things, what you actually mean is I want to kill people.
Actually, it means I want to crush bitches.
Yes,
I want to win.
Yeah.
But I got like so much joy out of that Rummy Cube moment. And it's just, I mean, it's fun to like play and be challenged by games.
Yeah.
And I think so often I've been like, I've had really busy work days. And by the end of the day, it's like, I don't want a game. But now I want to go full scale on like the board game world and just play board games with all our friends.
How about Xbox?
We can do that.
We'll
give and take. We'll have Rummy Cube for me and Xbox for you.
Last week, someone said that there was a game where they were so attracted to their Baldur's Gate 3.
It was a computer game.
Yeah, Asterion or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
Same idea.
Yeah, I want that game.
Okay, we want that game.
The vampire, the 200-year-old vampire is officially sexy.
Okay.
Yes. It probably has pimples too, so you'll be attracted.
That's how I'm getting you into the Xbox life, because we are about to go full scale.
Okay, final question for 2024. Okay. So there's this thing that you're supposed to have a word to define the year ahead, and I believe we did this last year, and I have no idea the word that we chose.
Oh my God, I have no memory of that.
Yeah. I think I'm like 50% sure we did it on the New Year episode.
Uh-huh.
Our memory is not great. Clearly, we're like aging into the 70-year-old category. What's your word going to be for 2024? Putting you on the spot.
I think I'm trying to think of something that's like aligning with where I've had issues in the last few weeks.
Do you want me to go first and you think about it?
No, okay. I want to go first.
Oh, I like it. Okay.
I deserve to be put on the spot.
Where have you had issues in the last few weeks?
Well, I've noticed my anxiety levels have just been slightly higher, like just background anxiety about nothing, just the physical manifestations of it. So you know what I want?
What?
Revenge.
Oh.
Revenge.
Okay, I was thinking you're going to say something like world peace, and instead you went the other direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, that's great. Harness that anxiety and fucking rage.
Reverse psychology on my mental health. You know, everyone says it's about mindfulness. No. 2024 is about vindictiveness.
I love that.
Live, laugh, love? No. I want lose, languish, and loathe.
That was outstanding and on the spot. Amazing.
Okay, what's your word?
Okay, it's huzzah.
Huzzah.
Because, okay, one, I can remember it. Clearly, we had a word last year, and I have no memory of it. And so choosing huzzah is a little bit of a cop-out because it's like choosing, like, Addy, David, or Leo. If I don't remember it, we have a problem.
Okay.
But also because, I don't know, I want to be silly and adventure. And also, I feel like I want to celebrate, like the small things and other people. And I feel like, to me, that's captured in huzzah. And there's an element of just being freaking spent when you say huzzah and crest a hill. And that's also, I want to send it. So,
all right. So 2024, the year of huzzah and also revenge.
I like it. Actually, combine the two of those together and there could be some interesting things.
It's going to be so good. Okay. So we have the best episode for you today. We're going to start with a strength training update. Then we're going to get into a wild sleep study, a follow-up on the revolutionary protein science that we teased last week, have some 2024 predictions, both serious ones and less serious ones, including continuous biomarker monitoring. Talk about super shoes on trails, a study on AI and medicine, following up on an episode a few weeks ago, hot takes, and then secrets.
I'm so excited. And I feel like we're like having some threads between episodes, which I like. So if this is your first time listening, you might be slightly lost, but we're building.
We always give good background on everything.
We give anchors.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So the big thing that happened in our life this last week is we assembled our pain cave downstairs.
We assembled our pain cave.
That's true.
We hired someone to assemble our pain cave, which was an amazing choice, actually.
Anything. So I'm fine at trying to assemble anything that isn't weight bearing.
Have you assembled anything in the last year?
I mean, come on, Megan. Why are you putting me on blast on the podcast?
Yeah. It's revenge.
It's revenge. Okay. I can't get down on you when you're just living my principles. Yes, we did hire someone to assemble a squat rack, a hex bar, and then a back extension machine. It was my Christmas gift to you.
It was an amazing Christmas gift. Actually, you said on one of these podcast episodes that you didn't get me a Christmas gift. And I was like, what are you talking about? You got me the best Christmas gift of all time.
And it's going to be so good. But we wanted to give you a brief warning. So, you know, we talk on here all the time about how strength work is really great. But you also need to be so careful as you start new routines. So I mentioned my knee was hurting. Why did that happen? Because I tried to load my knee a little bit too much.
Well, I love. So it got assembled down there and actually it was wild. As it was getting assembled, we were just hearing all these like power drill noise. And it was very validating because I was like, there is no way in hell we would be down there power drilling.
Yeah.
And so it felt great to have someone assemble it. But after they assembled it, the second sound that I heard coming from the pain cave was just you shredding weights. And I was like, oh no, this is not good.
So I went down there and all of a sudden my football brain activated.
Actually, but it was so cool. It was so sexy to see. I haven't seen you like that passionate about squats ever in the existence of our relationship.
Well, it's kind of like one of those sci-fi movies where something has a chip in its brain where it's just going along acting normally. And then a siren starts or some like little call. And then they just turn their head. And they're going. That was me when I saw a squat rack with 45-pound weights. I was like, football brain, activate. Here's the proper form. And I went up and just I put my shoulders back and I took off the pad on the bar. And I'm like, this is for weaklings. I'm going to just pound this shit. And then I hurt my knee.
You were getting revenge on the squat bar. It was great. Yeah. Yes. Actually, but it was amazing because I felt like as you were doing that, so I was lifting as well. And I've had like a pretty robust lifting past as like a field hockey player and in high school and college. And some of the form cues that you gave me were better than any strength coach has ever given me. And I'm like, David, what's your secret?
Megan,
you're so good.
Before I was a running coach, before I overthought everything about physiology and endurance performance, I did the same with trying to optimize my body for power and sprinting. And it's kind of crazy to think about because back then, I mean, it was really before we had this comprehensive ability to research online.
Before we had YouTube.
Yes. I mean, exactly. And so much of my learning process was based on hearing something from someone and then trying to apply it to myself and then developing my own theories and things like that. But over the course of time, I developed so many theories about how to become really fast at sprinting and really strong on the squat rack. So make sure you take everything I say with a grain of salt because none of it has been fact-checked since 2005.
Okay, but it all worked. You were telling me like where to place my eyes, where to place my like quads. It was good.
I told you where to place your ass.
Yes. You did make a few comments about my ass after lifting. I appreciate it. It was very motivating. I was like, I got to build this booty.
Yeah.
Because usually you're very like gentleman-like in your and you
am I dirty talk
and your dirty talk and
okay
you turned very not gentlemanlike in your dirty talk, and I actually appreciated it. I was like, I will shred some weights for this. It was motivating. It's like the best way for me to do consistent strength training.
You know what your butt was like after strength training?
What?
Bam.
That's what you've been saying.
Bam, bam. That was your butt.
Yeah. It was perfect. It was such a good moment.
But you had a similar experience because it seems like you hurt your elbow a little bit.
Yeah. Oh man, I woke up one morning and my elbow was just like all swollen and painful. And I had a visualization to the day before when I was trying to do chin-ups. And I've like actually gotten to the point where I can do consecutive chin-ups. I couldn't do any like the first time I went down after having this extensive history of being able to do a lot of chin-ups.
Yeah.
But I feel like I had to put like all my ulnar collateral ligaments into each chin up, and I was like orchestrating the best ways to get up there, and I definitely tweaked my elbow.
I'm gonna be worried that you pop a hernia.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, so the moral of this story is, yes, we support strength, but part of the reason that we do provide caution is our experience here, and that even when you're using really good form, as I was, I promise.
Oh, or your butt was going bam.
Bang, bam. Even when you do that, there are risks when you start these new types of routines. So it's a good reminder that, you know, in running, now's a good time to experiment with it, but we're not looking for stuff that's taking risks all the time, doing new movements all the time. You want to adapt to movements, get better at those movements, have them be specific to running, and not be constantly sore and on this risk pattern. So big fans of strength, not such a big fan of, for me, having to take some time off.
Was it worth it?
Was it worth it?
Yeah. Were your squats worth it? I mean, you're like, I actually feel really bad for you right now because you're dealing with this knee thing and it's not fun.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just like, I don't know. I feel like it's a hard mental health context, but was it worth it?
No.
It wasn't worth it. My elbow was worth it. The difference between like upper body and lower body injuries is actually my mom saw me like favoring my elbow and she was like, are you okay? I'm like, just an elbow.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about the upper body.
Worst case scenario, you can amputate.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, one of the more interesting findings of the Sub-2 project, when they Nike assembled all these scientists to talk about how to run the fastest you can. And in that process, they really looked at how to optimize running economy, how to minimize the amount of energy it took at that really fast pace, like 430 some miles. And one of the things they found is if you could get rid of someone's arms, it was the ultimate best thing for their running economy. So essentially, if you put someone in a straitjacket that held their arms right next to their body and they just ran like that. So everybody out there right now, put your arms against your body and just act like you're running. That is the best form. So maybe what you're doing is just improving your running economy, because if we need to amputate that arm, you're going to be rocking it.
I know, especially me, because my arm carriage is heinous when I run. Actually, every time I like, there's a video of like being taken of me running, I try to hold my arms up higher because it like, that's the more proper way to run. It's more economical. And then I see the video and it looks like I'm swinging these like giant Terminator arms, like going to the mall to do some serious mall walking. And I'm like, but they felt so high when I was doing it. Yeah.
No, it is one place you got to work. It looks like you're trying sometimes to run as it like arm curls, like there's so much tension up there. And it's a good lesson for everybody. Actually, take tension out of your upper body. Like it doesn't necessarily mean you need to have high arms, but our T-Rex logo is all about that loose arm carriage.
Well, actually, I was like, well, maybe if I like swing, if I'm like loose through the wrists and I swing my arms side to side, I'll hold them higher.
I think
it made the problem worse because my arms are down low and my like wrists are all floppy down there. It's pretty bad.
Loose wrists, arms side to side. That is a visual that I can get behind.
And a bam.
And a bang, bam. Actually, a little thing on that we're not going to get into detail. We took it out of the podcast that line, but one of the things I want to mention about strength work here is a study just came out that was on elite rowers that had them do a strength work intervention, and then it measured their responses to that. They didn't see a performance change. So this isn't one-to-one with performance, but what they did notice was an improvement in hemoglobin mass. So it shows how strength can operate in really weird ways. When you do this, you're having a systemic stress on the body that goes beyond just the performance impacts that might change things in a nonlinear pattern.
And it was actually fascinating because if you think about the mechanism behind that, you would assume that it's an increase in lean body mass or an increase in like musculature.
So you need more blood to supply the muscles.
Yeah, exactly. So if you need more working oxygen to supply the muscles, you're going to have to increase your hemoglobin mass. But it also wasn't via that mechanism either, which I thought was interesting. But I was the one that nixed the study because I was like, okay, there's no performance improvements. And I also couldn't have access to the full paper.
Okay.
And I was like, I need the full paper. I have so many questions.
This is the difference between Megan and I. I'm like, you know what? That abstract is so sexy. I don't understand any of it, but I want to talk about it. And Megan's like, unless you understand every single word of a study, you're going to be like, nope, not for the podcast.
But we've been seeing so many studies on hemoglobin mass.
Yes.
And so many studies where hemoglobin mass increases a like reasonably substantial amount, and there's no changes in performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a complicated,
thing, yes,
in terms of that. But I also think it's partially because we're just learning to measure blood volume so much. Like one thing we've gotten from listeners recently is a lot of questions about blood donation, for example.
Yes. Oh.
And, you know, blood donation, really tricky. We're not going to get into it here. But based on all these studies that are measuring increases in blood volume that are very small and seeing big changes, obviously decreasing your blood volume by a large amount could have pretty negative changes. So if you're out there and you've done that, understand that it's not just the 1 or 2 or 3 day cycles that they sometimes warn you about. It's important to understand the whole physiological context, even as it's an incredible societal good and it's an incredible charitable thing to do.
Well, actually, what I would love ahead, so as we later on, we're going to get into our 2024 predictions, which is talking about like continuous lactate monitors. And I feel like there's this new era of continuous and then like a Mad Lib blank monitoring where we're being able to monitor so many different things in a continuous fashion. I haven't seen this yet, but we have a lot of smart people on this podcast that are listening to this. I think I would love to see a continuous blood plasma volume measurement.
Whew.
That would be hard. It would be very hard to construct.
I don't know. I don't know if it's possible.
I think you could do it. I don't think you could actually do it directly. I think you could do it through some like some proxy means.
Yeah. Like perhaps cutting off their arm.
Yeah, exactly.
And see how much blood drains out.
Well, they'll be faster.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can do like a proportion. What arm percentage is of their body mass and then determine how much fluid they actually have.
Exactly. It's my entire theory. Anything in the upper body is tis but a flesh wound.
Yes. Okay. On to a sleep study. This is kind of relevant for 2024 because as always, it's a good time to refocus on getting as much sleep as you can. It doesn't mean you have to be sleeping. My philosophy for athletes is always just spending as much time in bed as you can.
Being peaceful.
Being peaceful in bed. Yeah. You know, thinking about all the ways you'll get revenge. Yeah. Just plotting. You can be in bed plotting. You don't need to be in bed sleeping. That's what I've been doing.
Actually, and if you wear some like some sleep trackers, maybe it'll tell you that time of being in bed, deep plotting, seeking deep revenge, you're actually in the midst of like your deep REM sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You don't want light plotting.
Oh no. Yeah. You want
deep plotting.
Deep plotting.
You want things that have like 8 different lines of causation.
Yes.
You want something that's going to require like 18 folders and a flow chart to explain.
You want those delta waves in the brain when revenge is going on.
So yeah, that's a reminder. It's always just spend as much time in bed as you can. It's okay if you're not sleeping. Like that's the big thing. I think often there's this lesson that, oh, you need to sleep this many hours per night. It's like bullshit. You just need to relax that long if you can. And whatever you can do, like 20 minutes more will add up over time. And even if you're not sleeping, it's worth not getting out of bed at 3 a.m. if you don't have to.
And to me, that notion, especially like before a race when my sleep might be more impacted because I'm like up in the middle of the night thinking about revenge on all of my race competitors.
Crushing bitches.
Yeah, exactly. I'm up at midnight thinking about crushing bitches. That notion to me is like a warm hug because sometimes I do struggle to sleep on race day.
Yeah.
And I think that plus this study, which is amazing, it's called Manipulating Sleep Duration Perception Changes, Cognitive Performance, and Exploratory Analysis.
Yeah, it's such a cool study. And you know, whenever you're having trouble sleeping, what we do is I just ball my hand into a fist and just go up and down your back, digging in like 3 inches. Yeah. And for some reason, you usually fall asleep after.
I know. It's like whenever like a computer can't work and you just like smack it a couple times and you're like, maybe you'll wake up. It's the opposite for me. And you're like, maybe she'll go to sleep.
Just got to smack that.
Yeah.
So this study, what it looked at is it did a deception analysis, which is very fascinating. It took 16 participants, of which 8 were female. It gave them an 8-hour sleep opportunity followed by 2 5-hour sleep opportunities. So this was across 3 nights. But here's a quote. Upon waking, they were randomized to being informed that they received either an 8-hour or 5-hour sleep opportunity via a clock that ran either fast, slow, or normally.
Okay, I want one of those clocks.
Isn't that cool?
Wouldn't it be fun to just get like owned by a clock?
Yeah.
Okay, but here's what they found, which I think is really cool. So the participants' reaction time was significantly quicker and the brain performance was better when they told they were getting 8 hours of sleep independent of the time actually spent sleeping. So if they slept 5 hours and the researchers told them they slept 8, their reaction time and their brain performance was better. I think that's so cool.
Yeah. And I think it shows a lot about how much our own perceptions of these things play, not just like a placebo-based role where you're like, you know, applying it in this 1 or 2% manner, but in a much larger way and how we think about ourselves, how we conceive ourselves and what we think we're capable of. So I don't think this is placebo. I think this is actually just showing the power of belief in whatever you've got going. And so here, I mean, it's just wild to me. And it points out that like your sleep tracker could be doing you a lot of harm.
Or could be doing you a big service.
Yes,
if it's
true.
Garmin, because I feel like for you, and I've seen this actually pretty consistently across athletes, is that Garmin tends to overestimate sleep.
It does. And it's at least for me.
And it's great when you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh God, 10 hours. Yeah. When in reality, you were just like chilling, watching Netflix for 2 hours.
Often in the middle of the night, you'll wake up to pee and I won't be able to go to sleep for an hour after. It'll just say I was awake for a minute. And I'm like, damn, that's some good revenge plotting right there. I'll take it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Oura Ring tends to be a little bit better. I think there's actually, I was just in a lecture the other week about how there's struggles with all sleep trackers.
Yeah.
But I think like Oura Ring, some of these other sleep trackers tend to be good. But I think it's just about like know yourself with data. Like for me, I've gotten to a point where maybe because I'm sleeping really well,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, it's data that doesn't necessarily bother me.
Yeah. And I think main thing is, as long as you're spending time in bed, if you kind of delude yourself into thinking it's okay, it can be okay. Maybe long term, there's some bigger issues that this study obviously doesn't get into.
Actually, I was going to say that is like, I don't know how much you can like offset if this happens. So this was 2 nights of consecutive sleep. If this was 14 days of consecutive sleep,
yeah,
I feel like we'd have seen much bigger impacts that you can't necessarily like think your way out
of. But it just, for me, it's more of a reset to think about, I don't know, this culture of saying to everyone, oh, don't think about the 1% until you're sleeping this many hours. And it's like, I don't think that's actually true. I think that a lot of the times, yes, sleep matters, but what matters a lot more is being kind to yourself and mm-hmm. just being really open that it's okay. Which brings me to what I want to do. This is my 2024 startup idea.
Ooh.
A sleep tracker that just tells you you're getting a 99, like, and sometimes it lies a little. It says like 91 sleep score just to make it seem believable, but does that every night and sees what happens.
Well, we should merge that into a watch too, where it tells you that you're running a minute per mile faster,
yeah,
and see what the actual gains are. I feel like across the board, that athlete would have like big life and performance gains.
I totally agree.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, but do you want to know? This is for real.
Uh-huh.
So my Oura Ring gave me my like 2023 Unwrapped, which is kind of like the equivalent of like Spotify Unwrapped or Strava Year in Review. Do you want to know how many hours per night I averaged in 2023 per sleep?
Oh, Megan, I don't know if we're going to have to edit this out.
Why?
Because you're a new mom in 2023. We shouldn't like rub it in.
We're not rubbing it in.
I know how much you
okay,
sleep.
Okay, I do not have sleep privilege. I have been a shitty sleeper my entire life.
That's
and
important
so this,
context.
This actually gives people hope.
Yes.
Because I have really like, to me, like part of my 2023 goals actually were to be intentional with this. And I was. And so I think there is hope out there. If you were like me and were a horrible sleeper to the point where you had to be pulverized at night by your partner.
That's true. And I mean, there was a long period of time where you just couldn't sleep very well at all.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So this year, is this measuring time in bed or total sleep?
Actual sleep, not time in bed.
By
yes.
the Oura Ring. So
yes.
it's like a good
it's actually
calculation.
Legit. Yes. Yeah.
Because if it was Garmin, I would say 77 hours. Okay. I'm going to guess 8 hours and 14 minutes a night.
8 hours and 43 minutes
a
night.
Oh my God, Megan.
Yeah, I know, which is pretty cool. Actually, I'm proud of myself for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
You just
it's like it's a sleep win that is like unheard of for me.
All that is a sign that we got extremely lucky on the genetic lottery when it comes to our baby's sleep patterns.
I know. We should put an Oura Ring. Actually, if we put a Garmin on him, it would be like, he sleeps 90 hours.
Yeah. So definitely a little privilege there, but I'm proud of you because you have emphasized sleep extension, especially like the 30 minutes of giving yourself in bed where you're just there with your closed eyes. And you know what? Sometimes you'll come out of bed an hour and a half later.
Oh, and it's great. And I feel so good on those days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like that's been really helpful. And I think for me, like a lot of background stress carries over into sleep.
Yeah.
And once I address the background stress in 2023, I feel great.
I love it so much. Okay, let's go on to the protein study that we talked about briefly last week, but we're going to give a whole primer this week if you missed it last week, because this is probably one of the more revolutionary studies we've seen in all of 2023, maybe in the last 5 years. It was in Cell Reports Medicine, and it was essentially just addressing the old theory that you may have heard about, that there's a limit on the upper level of protein that you can synthesize in one setting. So the traditional theory was around 25 grams of protein is as much as you can synthesize. So having more than that, great, but it's not going to be synthesized. What this study found is that there is no upper limit on anabolic processes that can happen from protein intake. So it basically just throws an entire theory in the trash can. Fascinating stuff. And we want to get into some of the details today.
It is coming in and totally disrupting nutrition science, which I feel like to me is wild. It's also ballsy because like, I feel like protein has become kind of a dogma across like nutrition science, like all different, even like exercise physiology. And I feel like to do a study like this with the rigorous methodology that they have, it makes me really excited about what's to come. I don't think I'm yet quite in the camp of like, I fully believe this, but I want to see a lot more research. And we actually touched on this on last week's podcast too.
Yeah. What I think about protein You know what, Megan?
What?
It's sexy.
Sexy? Oh, set protein is totally sexy.
It's sexy. This needs to be in the title because I wrote an article for Trollrunner on this study the day after it came out. Because I was just so, I wasn't slated to write an article. I was just like, okay, the world needs to write about this. I also wanted to get dibs on the science before Alex Hutchinson gets in there and writes his amazing article for Outside. I'm like, I'm going to write an article with jokes for Trollrunner now.
It was so cool to see you like excite, like you, the level of excitement that you had about this article.
Yeah.
It was very arousing.
I also took out some jokes because I wanted to make it, I knew it was going to get viewed by a lot of people. So I wanted to make it a little bit more acceptable to the masses. And I had a joke about how the study was essentially making it feel like the earth was flat, that there was science indicating the earth was flat. And then later on, I was talking about like protein and how it essentially means you can have a little more protein. And I had a line in there that I was really proud of, which is the earth may be flat, but those scoops are rounded. But I edited it out.
It was a great line. Also, it was a shocker that you edited it out and like on your own volition.
I did.
Usually it's me. I'm like, you got to take that out, dude. And you did that before I even edited.
I'm starting to get a filter at age 35. I'm pretty proud of myself. So what's interesting actually is the highest viewed Trollrunner nutrition article of all of 2023, based on Trollrunner's metrics that they sent out to all listeners, which I thought was really cool. And it was like a strong finishing kick because the article didn't come out till Christmas Eve.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Last minute gains.
Yeah. And so I think the big lesson here is just that protein is all the rage right now, and everyone needs to take or have some focus on it to try to get up ideally into the triple digits, 100 plus grams. But how do you do that? It's really hard. I mean, we were talking with your mom who heard a recommendation about getting to 100 plus grams, and she was essentially like, well, how do I do that? And I think this study addresses a lot of how to approach your own nutrition.
And I love that we're talking about this because I really like where we are right now in the field of nutrition. Like, yeah. I feel like we're in this like nutrition revolution where it's like more protein, more carbs, more fat. And I feel like typically, like, I feel like we go in these phases where it's like almost like the cyclical nature of like, let's go low carb or high protein and different things. And it's fun to just see everything elevated. We're like turning the dial up to 12 on all the macronutrients. And I actually think we're going to see some wild adaptations ahead because of that.
But that's a good question. Will there be the pushback against this that actually has like a cyclical nature, or is this just the new normal?
I think there'll be small scale pushback against it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that there's already been small scale pushback against like the carb revolution in terms of like 90 plus grams of carbs per hour.
Definitely.
And I think it's just the nature of humanity is to push back.
Yeah. What I'm fascinated to see too is how the performance impacts of what we're talking about, which we're really focused on, interact with the longevity impacts that are basically another field of research entirely, largely happening in mice. Because they do seems like the two shall not meet sometimes. And so curious to see how all of that, but let's do a basic overview. I'm going to read from the article in our old Science Corner style to give you a understanding of how they structured the methodology here.
And if you like how we're doing this, we've done some Science Corner episodes in the past, and maybe we'll bring them back.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. Okay, here it goes. To evaluate the hypothesis about protein, researchers had participants complete resistance training consisting of 5 minutes of easy biking, followed by 4 sets of 10 reps of the following resistance exercises. 1, leg press machine. 2, the leg extension. 3, the lat pull down. And 4, the chest press. This was a hard routine, with the first set at 65% of their 1 rep max, followed by subsequent sets at 80% of 1 rep max until volitional fatigue. Participants received, quote, strong verbal encouragement, end quote, to push back the fatigue barrier. You have not lived until you imagine a postdoc screaming, you are a beautiful and strong unicorn, at a study participant doing leg presses.
Okay, this is one of my favorite sentences of yours in the history of all of your sentences. One, because like it's great writing, obviously, and it made me laugh. But two, because I can see you being that postdoc that just like fucks up study design because you're so motivating and encouraging that everyone is going to send it so hard. It's going to be hard for studying.
Well, that's what I loved when reading this. Just this was buried in the method section, and it was the quote, strong verbal encouragement. So in other words, they're lifting and they're getting screamed at by these research, help, like the postdocs, I imagine.
Yeah.
And for me, that visual was just the most joyous thing I've ever heard.
I love that. I also like this too, because I feel like a lot of the strength articles that we've referenced recently have been a lot lighter, like minimal dose strength training. And this is hard. I mean, they're getting to the point of volitional fatigue, and it would be fun to be in there and just being like, go, go.
Yeah.
Would that motivate you to have someone screaming at you?
Oh, it does for lifting.
Yes.
To bring back the football stuff. Uh-huh. It wouldn't for running necessarily.
Yeah.
For running, I want a little bit more peace in my life. But for football, I want to be like slapped in the face, take smelling salt, just have it be like a chaotic, brutal experience. That's how you get up the most plates.
Oh, I love that. Also sounds like you're 2024 ahead.
Yes.
Revenge on the plates.
Okay, back to the article. 36 beautiful unicorn subjects, all male, hence the horn, received three different protein conditions. One, placebo. Two, 25 grams of milk protein. Three, 100 grams of milk protein.
Okay, I have a question for you. Uh-huh. And I'm deeply sorry if I miss this in an editing process. Why is it that only male unicorns have horns?
Why is it? Oh, that's a good point.
I think it's an all gender thing.
Oh, yeah.
I just see this now and I'm like, fuck, I'm so sorry. I should have edited
it's
that.
It's true.
Yeah.
All
unicorns.
The unicorn lobby are going to come for us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Lots of 1-star ratings coming for this podcast.
Maybe they're not coming for us because they only come for virgins. Did you know that about unicorns?
No, what?
Oh, like in the mythical times, unicorns are like, they only like interact and like deeply connect with virgins.
Okay, so me for most of my high school life, yeah. Most of my college, I'm honestly, you don't want to know when that ended.
Yeah. Wait, so when you left your unicorn era.
Yeah. Honestly, I still have a unicorn spirit,
you
even
do,
though we're
yes.
married now.
Yeah, I know.
I feel like a lot of people are like, he's probably a virgin still.
You can have that tension. You can have a unicorn spirit and like deeply bam.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like Taylor Swift, eras. Errors about me.
Yes, exactly. But we should have corrected. You can always reach out to Charter and be like, we redact the statement.
Wait, so the unicorns come for virgins? In what context is that?
Like mythical to context. That like,
wait, why are they coming for the virgins though?
It's like where they feel most comfortable interacting with.
Oh, so they're
like
only...
only the virgins can like catch them.
Oh, yeah. So you can't tame a unicorn unless you're a virgin.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then what happens? And then like you have sex and no more unicorn time for you?
Yeah, I guess the unicorn just runs away and goes on its merry life.
Oh my God.
I know. Isn't that wild?
That is so interesting.
Yeah, I know.
You're bringing facts today, Megan.
Well, now you know that all unicorns have horns.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. I apologize to everyone out there. As a reminder, if we offended any unicorn fans, give the podcast 5 stars, counteract
yeah.
that,
yes.
And click follow wherever you listen. That really helps other people find it. And it's really important for us. Okay. Then back to the article, last little bit. The milk protein was derived from a lactating Holstein cow infused with isotope markers for tracing. That milk was processed into protein concentrate, all combined with IV amino acid tracers. I could not love this study any more than I do now.
I totally agree. This was the point in the study in which I was like, they went hard on their methodology to like get this lactating Holstein cow and then infuse it with isotope markers for its milk. It's like, wow, that's impressive.
Did you take out my next sentence there?
No.
Oh, I must have messed up and placed again because it was my favorite joke of the whole thing.
Do you remember it?
So it was about the rest of the methodology. I'm going to see if I put it in. I didn't. So I'm just going to paraphrase what I said next.
Oh, this should be good.
It was that involved 12 different blood samples and 4 different muscle biopsies from all these participants over the following 12 hours.
That's intense.
Yeah. And I said something like, if researchers were going to poke me that many times, they'd have to buy me a drink first. Ideally, milk from a lactating Holstein cow. Is that worth it?
That's amazing. It's a White Russian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the drink. Yeah.
True.
I know. Love it. Yeah, it's a New Year's Eve cocktail. That sounds amazing. Also, I love that I think that was like almost the exact sentence.
I forgot that it was IV isotope infused lactating Holstein cow, which I think makes it even more funny. Okay, so now you have this set up. They give these athletes a really tough strength program, which is an interesting thing and different than what we do in running a lot of the time. Then they give them this amount of milk protein that's traced. And then they monitor for 12 hours, both via blood tests and muscle biopsies. What do they find? So to give that context, what's really important is protein metabolism science. There are generally 3 reservoirs they're looking for. The first is incorporation into muscle tissues.
Which is great. Yes. That's considered protein synthesis. And that's like what we want. That helps drive adaptations, muscle strength, hypertrophy, all of that good jazz.
And that's where they always thought there was a cap. That, like once you got over 25 grams, it went into one of the other buckets. Bucket 2, they are catabolized.
Catabolized, yes.
Catabolized.
Words are hard. Yeah.
Words are so hard, especially that word. I've never said that out loud. Which in this case was amino acid oxidation. So the amino acids, instead of being synthesized, are oxidized, which is not necessarily a great thing. And then 3 is just a very small bucket that they accounted for, which was that they temporarily increased the tissue-free amino acid pool. The authors said that they accounted for that in their calculations. We're going to take their word for it.
Also, I love the idea of a tissue-free amino acid pool. So that essentially means that like amino acids are hanging out and their fate will become something in the future, but we're still not sure whether they're going to go to synthesis or oxidation or like where they'll go in the body. Yeah. But it's so cool. They have so much opportunity ahead of them.
So much.
It's like Schrodinger's amino acids. Like they could be anything at this moment. Actually, that's maybe not true. It's more that they have a future ahead of them.
They could be anything.
Yeah, they could be anything.
We can all be anything.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that cool?
It's so cool. So the big finding here is that synthesis went up substantially over the 12-hour period for the 100-gram group versus the 25-gram group, and the anabolic response increased. So over the first 4 hours, it was a 20% increase in protein synthesis. Over the hours 4 to 12, it was 40%. And when you averaged all this out, it was just over 30%. So that's a really big increase, totally upends what we traditionally thought in this field.
And I think that's because a lot of the studies that have traditionally been done in this field, they stop looking at protein synthesis at 6 hours and beyond. And it's like, oh, we should actually look at some of these longer time horizon points to understand what's happening to continued protein synthesis after big meals.
Yeah. And they, as far as I can tell, at least the authors of this study said that they had only looked at 45 grams before. So by doing 100 grams, the key here was just to say, wow, if you go off the charts with a level that almost no one will have in a reasonable setting.
Yeah, 100 grams, that's like all. Thinking about the quantity of food, that would actually be pretty hard to consume.
Yeah. Well, I saw a funny thing from the author that was essentially saying it's like at a department cookout when someone has a few burgers.
Yes.
Like that was kind of their idea here. It's like a really large amount that might be within reason for a big, big, big meal, but also will help magnify the findings so that we can see variation, which it did. So back to the article in my writing. As the author said, quote, "These data support our hypothesis that even large amounts of dietary protein are effectively utilized to support postprandial tissue anabolism, but require a more prolonged period for complete protein digestion and amino acid absorption to become available for incorporation into tissues," end quote. And then back to me. "I'm deeply offended whenever anyone treats the word data as plural. We get it. You have a PhD and I don't."
That is one of my other favorite sentences in the history of your writing. Also too, oh my gosh, I struggle. Maybe I'm just like, you know what? I'm just trying to be like low key because I have a hard time treating data as plural.
Megan, you always do though. It's one of the things that really broke my heart when you did your PhD.
Is that I transitioned?
Yeah, you're no longer the person I met.
Oh, you say, so sorry.
These data as opposed to this data.
I know. It depends who I'm talking to.
Megan is obviously singular.
I know.
It is, right? You're agreeing with me?
No, I'm not agreeing
because
with you.
My 2024 is about revenge and specifically revenge on anyone who uses data as a plural word.
I know. It's like every time I use these data, I'm like, oh, I'm such a pretentious bitch.
You are.
I know.
I'm glad you realized it.
I know it's hard, but then if you don't use it in like the settings I use it, like you're also, they look at you and they're like, do you not know it's plural?
You can't worry about that, Megan.
I know.
You said that you're in 2024, you're only creating for yourself.
I know. It's going to be this data for everything I create from here on out.
Yes. To infinity and beyond.
Huzzah!
Okay, so very interesting study. It's not saying to have 100 grams of protein, as we talked about a little bit last week.
Oh yeah, that would be a lot.
This is just saying that if you're looking at 100 grams in a day, you can have bigger doses, which I think is helpful in the context of a busy life. Like for me, often I'll just be like, all right, I'm going to have 50 grams in a protein shake, and it makes the rest of the day easy.
How does it make your GI system feel the rest of the day?
Well, great. Incredible. You know me, my GI system, Megan, spotless. You know, unicorns come and lick my GI system for their energy, for their sustenance, because it's so pure and perfect.
Yeah, your GI system is the furthest part of your body from a virgin possible.
That's actually true. Yeah. My GI system has been violated many times over.
It's fair. It's also violated many surfaces and objects and pieces of clothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very sorry to the McDonald's on Baseline Street in Boulder. Anyone who's ever been in there, they probably had to retire that toilet.
I didn't know about that experience.
Oh, Megan.
There's some things that you share with me, and then there's others where you're like, I don't know if this is even for Megan.
Yeah. Well, you know, earlier we were like, bam, bam. There's also the corollary of that, which is boom. It's not good at all. Okay. Some questions for speculation that we just want to tease. Some will just go through real fast. One, how does the use of milk protein affect the findings? Mm-hmm. Milk protein, notoriously slower digesting. So maybe that plays a role here that could be relevant.
Actually, there's always some recommendations to like have milk protein at night before bed because it's slower digesting. It helps athletes like possibly recover and like, you know, be satisfied before bed. So I thought it was an interesting choice for the study.
Yeah, that's why the cow right next to our bed suck on the udder, just like a gerbil. Just and you're topped off for the night.
That's amazing.
Okay, number two, what is putting 100 grams against more space protein doses do? Like 33, 33, 33, or 25 four times? And I think the researchers weren't trying to say that 100 grams is superior. They were just trying to say you might not need to have the 25 model, but I'd be curious to see what happens if you just did it one-to-one. So the same study design, but also the 25 across, you know, every 3 hours within the study design.
Well, I really like the 100 because it's like sometimes when you want to find something that disrupts a field, you really need to start big to be able to find some sort of effect size. And then it's like, okay, let's get a bunch of other studies that are looking at like 60 grams of protein and 40 grams of protein. And let's look at other ways to space it. And I'm excited for the research to get more granular on this and to see what happens with the rest of the field. Okay. Another question that I have is, what are the compensatory mechanisms when you have these like chronic larger like protein doses that occur compared to acute ones?
Yes.
And I guess my question is like, if the body is consistently consuming like 50 grams of protein at once, is there some sort of compensatory reaction where you start turning down that protein synthesis over time?
Yeah, or could it do something to the liver? Or what happens if you're not doing this type of hard endurance or resistance training before?
Yes,
you know, exactly. If you're not depleting the muscles completely, maybe there could be a lot more oxidation.
Yeah.
So there could be negative impacts. Like, I do think that there is a limit to this because I've lived it personally. Oh man, it all comes full circle.
I know.
Talking about college, from actually college and high school, my proteins era. That was my protein era.
Your unicorn and your protein era. Very, very different and interesting synergy. I like it.
The protein virgin.
Yeah.
That's what everybody called me. I just walked into class. They were doing roll call. Protein virgin? I'd be like, present. But back then in high school, when I was really trying to put on a lot of muscle, I mean, I would probably have 300 grams of protein a day.
Oh my God. That's horrifying.
But
you've actually never told me that exact number.
Yeah. Well, I remember I would have a bar that was gross that had like 40 grams of protein. And with it, I would have a protein shake that would have 40. So I'd do 80 at once. And definitely my body was not absorbing all of that. And it did not feel great for my health.
Yeah. Where was it going?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Yeah.
This is the story of my life.
It was going to violate your GI tract.
Yeah. just violate every... I mean, I feel like my body... It's very strange. You've seen pictures of me. Like, I was kind of like puffed up
in a weird way. Yeah, your neck was puffed up.
Yeah, and I think there was probably some water retention and things like that. So I think that's interesting. So are the findings different for different ages? I think one place this is especially relevant is people like Megan's mom, like a 60-year-old athlete, and where protein is much more important to maintain strength levels. Mm-hmm. These findings could be especially important, but all these athletes were younger men. So we don't know if the same principles apply.
I actually love that you brought up that point because protein is actually really like extra important for aging athletes and even just the aging population. Yeah. And so I think that's a great point, is this is something that could potentially help aging athletes. Another question like related to age for me is gender. Like, you know, I think female athletes, like 60 grams is a lot at a time for a female athlete. And it's like, what are the differences across genders?
Yeah.
Do they involve horns?
Yeah. These aren't unicorns with horns. These are the horses. Yeah. I think the gender question is really important here. And, you know, I the authors didn't put in why they didn't include women in this study design. I think every author should be required to do that.
Oh, for sure.
Because it makes sense to me why they didn't, probably given hormonal variations within the menstrual cycle.
Yes. If this is a short study and they're looking at protein synthesis and you catch different phases of the menstrual cycle, it could be complicated.
Yeah.
But I think you need to explain that in your introduction or your conclusion or discussion if you plan to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, I just think that's a place that exercise science needs to go in general, that even if you're not doing it, just say why, even if it's a sentence, very easy. And then I think the final big thing is, how does this actually translate to recovery and adaptation and thus performance? I think in the future, what we're going to see are some of these more granular studies, but then also a zoomed out study where you start to dose people differently over the course of like a week and with a training intervention and see how either strength or endurance respond. So we don't know the answers to any of those questions, but I do think that it's just the coolest time to think that this area of work has been totally disrupted, as Megan said, and we don't know what comes next. Wow. I can't wait to follow this and hear what the rest of this field brings.
It's so cool. And this is like partially a question and partially like a response to that is.
You're like one of those people in the audience at a conference. It's like, this is more of a comment than a question.
Actually, if I was in the audience, I'd be like, this is a comment, but I'm actually going to give you an abstract of my own research as I tell you the comment. No, I'm not. That's not what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I guess my question is like, okay, so how does this relate also to longevity?
Yeah.
So like there's performance on one arm and longevity on the other arm. And I always find it fascinating, like what, when given decisions, like what do athletes do in terms of that like performance longevity seesaw?
Yeah.
And where are areas that performance and longevity are actually on the same side of the seesaw?
Yeah.
And I guess I still have a lot of questions on the study related to that.
Totally agree. And we don't know exactly where this is going. All we're saying for now is over the course of time, if you're sore, if you feel like you're not adapting, even little things like my calves are sore in the morning, or I get muscle injuries or whatever, increasing your protein intake can help. In the old days, that was a little bit onerous. Maybe now we're seeing it doesn't need to be that way. It can be as simple as doing a 50 gram protein shake. If you do it and try it, report back to us. It's always helpful to learn. But we're going to keep you updated on where the research goes from here.
Yeah, we should have them sign waivers for their GI system or like other, I don't know. I think try it, but keep us posted, and we're not responsible.
We're not responsible?
Yes. That's like the doctor in me. I'm like, oh, don't tell them.
Megan's 2024 resolution now is a denial of all liability. Yeah. It is fine print. You're the fine print bitch. Huzzah that. Huzzah. And just like, I don't know you shit.
I know. Well, if you're going to do it in fine print, you might as well make it bold.
You know what's non-fine print?
What?
Our love of Athletic Greens.
Oh, it's so true. That is huzzah level. Actually, it's so huzzah level that people are probably like, we get it, you guys. We know that you're like legit obsessed with it.
Well, all the time though, people will contact us and say, you finally wore us down after a year and a half of saying this. And I did it, and my HRV improved, my resting heart rate went down, my recovery increased. And I think that experience is something that's mirrored so much that now we're not doing this for our own benefit. We're doing this as a public service announcement, Megan. This is basically like Mr. Rogers just saying like, this is why we're here as a family, as a community.
Wow. We should really just keep like a community service hour sheet, and we can just tally up how much community service we're doing.
Are we heroes?
I think we are. Yeah.
Drinkag1.com/swap, S-W-A-P. We both swear by it. It's been huge for us. One of the reasons that I think we've been able to sleep so well and had good numbers this year, despite having a new kid, is because we had this as insurance. It's not just, the green part of it is almost random. It's more about the multivitamins, the adaptogens, and everything else. So if you go to drinkag1.com/swap, unlock the offer there, you get bonus amounts, you get vitamin D, and it's just a great way to start your day.
Actually, that's a great point about my sleep in 2023 is it kind of coincided exactly with when I restarted like Athletic Greens after breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's something related there. It just makes me feel so peaceful.
The next step is giving it to Leo.
Yeah. In 18 years.
He's going to sleep 17 hours a night.
I know.
It's going to be terrible. Okay. Let's get on to news and fun things. We have so much cool things to discuss here. God, we're already 50 minutes in.
How did that happen? Oh, I just like talking to you.
The time flies so much.
I know. Well, it's like, when I said that I want to create for me,
yeah,
I want to create for us. Like, this is a date. And I feel like we've just like brought like many, many thousands of listeners on our 50 minute date with us. I'm very sorry.
You look so beautiful right now too.
Oh, are you, do you have a tagline for that?
No.
Okay, no. Good. Thank you.
You're just looking deep into my eyes as you said it was a date.
It is a date. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. You know when you have like a third wheel? We have like many thousands of wheels.
That's true.
Yeah.
Also, actually, before the podcast, you're wearing a new bra. Is it a John G bra?
It's not a new bra.
It's not a new bra.
And it's sadly not a John G bra.
Sadly not a John G bra. But I was like, oh, wow. The strength training is really paying off there.
And I pulled out, I have like, they put the pads in the bra. So I'm like, it's these, bro.
I don't understand those.
Yeah. I feel like they're like I'd actually usually pull them out because they annoy me and they usually fall out anyways. But I think they're to like shield the nipples from showing through. And I'm like, oh, I don't care. I'll just flash my nipples to all of existence.
Maybe I need to take a different approach. Instead of being like, I don't understand them, be like, why don't men have them? So wouldn't that be great in a pair of underwear to have the bra pads, essentially?
Isn't that a cup?
No, it's not, because it's soft. Cups are hard.
Yeah. I mean, you can think they have like hard ones of those in bras too.
Yeah, but what if we had soft ones in our junk?
Don't they make soft cups?
No. I'm talking about for running and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, true. Yes.
This is discrimination. I've always said that men are discriminated against. And this is evidence of that. I'm like a comedian. I'm like Dave Chappelle up here. Men are the ones that are discriminated against. And you know why? It's because we don't have soft stuff in our crotches.
Actually, I do have a question for you. Is like in women, like the bounce is uncomfortable. Like definitely you wear like, I mean, it's like bra science is really fascinating.
Oh, I've always wondered that. Yeah.
We need a lot more bra science. And like some women, and I feel like we're at the point where like it's still not there because some women have to wear like three bras to keep the bounce from happening.
Yeah.
But like men would have, do you have bounce?
I hope I'm not giving it away that like, for women, obviously, if you're more largely endowed, it's a bigger issue where you need to think about it a little bit more.
Yes. Yeah.
I was about to say, it's not that big of an issue. And that's, oh shit.
Yeah, maybe it actually is.
Yeah. Actually, what I just said, such a big issue, Megan, such a big issue. I run and sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I hit my forehead. No, it's not an issue at all. Don't even think about it, actually.
It just like hangs out there.
Yeah, I think, yes, evolutionarily it's designed to,
Yeah, I know, but like what about women evolutionarily?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I guess. Know. Yeah, I'm not gonna make the next logical step, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean it's complicated. I imagine actually, it just shows that, you know, so much of where discrimination like is intertwined is not just like societal bullshit. It's also like things with physiology, and that's mm-hmm. why things yes, like yeah. the exercise science point that we've made seriously, like everything we've said so far is a joke, is important, is because all of this is so wrapped up in fundamental ways of thinking mm-hmm. that often people are indoctrinated with from a young age, that we need to push back against it actively with these rules of like, you know, if it's not equal for some reason, we talk about why it's not equal. And in conclusion, put soft shit in my shorts.
Well, actually, a question for you is, so for women, like around the menstrual cycle, breast volume can increase by uh-huh. up to like 30%, which is wild. Like,
yeah.
Imagine if that happened in male athletes, that like the size just increased 30%. Maybe yeah. it would be a problem.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was going to say something.
You have a big smile on your face. It's probably going to be real good.
I see, it happens when I see Jim Walmsley at UTMB. Okay, on to news and fun things. Let's do 2024 predictions. This is seasonal and also, I think, pretty interesting scientifically. Our first prediction that we want to talk about is that lactate monitoring is going to go mainstream, primarily through continuous lactate monitoring. So right now, lactate is used in things like Norwegian training to measure intensity levels. In general, you can see where you're at around aerobic threshold and lactate threshold and really dial things in, especially for moderate intervals, like threshold intervals. But to do it, you have to prick your finger or prick your ear. It's a little bit complicated. It is subject to a lot of error.
And you're deathly afraid of blood.
I don't love blood.
Yes, I know. I've been wanting us to get a lactate monitor for so long, and I feel like you've resisted it, and I don't want to push it.
Yeah, every time you get your period, I put you in the barn. Sorry. Maybe a little too far after our recent comment. But these continuous lactate monitors might be able to do what continuous glucose monitors did. We mm-hmm. talked about these before, but some are coming. Like if you Google it right now, you'll see a number of companies that have placeholders online talking about their product is on the way. There's patents out there for this. And we haven't seen one yet personally, but I can't wait. I think it's going to fundamentally alter training. And I think 2024 is the year.
Okay. I'm simultaneously very excited for this. And also I have this layer of skepticism because yeah. like, so there's actually this great website online that has, it's called K-Watch Glucose, which does continuous glucose monitoring through a sensor on a watch. Yeah. So it's not invasive. Like, there's the Abbott CGM, which is not invasive, super invasive either, but it does go like beneath the skin. And it goes there like into the interstitial fluid, like beneath the skin. But this watch is like, it's a biosensor on the surface of the skin yeah. that looks at glucose. And then they have another one coming out called K-Watch Athlete that looks at continuous lactate, very similar mechanism, like through a biosensor on the skin. But it concerns me because yeah. like my heart rate isn't even accurate on the wrist-based heart rate watches. Like how are they going to do lactate or glucose?
I don't know. I mean, if lactate is just a prick of your finger or a prick of your ear, and you're getting similar readings across the body, it seems pretty simple then to extrapolate that whatever works for a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor, will also work for lactate.
Oh, yes.
Because it's systemic distribution. And, you know, I don't think I guess they're saying here they can measure it through like fluids.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And yeah, totally makes sense to me. You know, obviously it might take some time to calibrate, but I mean, just a little bit of understanding of these numbers is going to be game changing. So I mean, I bet it's already being used in ways that we aren't aware of at the top level of especially like cycling.
Yeah, it makes me more excited for people to have access to it. But I guess I'm a purist because it's like, for me, I don't trust my wrist-based data. And so I'm always wearing a chest strap because I'm like, I want the real truth.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm going to be that person like taking blood till 2030 because I'm like, I want the real answers.
You know what happens to purists?
What?
They become dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And they go extinct.
That's actually true.
And,
yeah.
You know, you're actually really adaptable.
I am actually open. I am very open, but I want the truth.
Okay. So let's contrast that with one of your predictions that you put on here, which was about monitoring hormones for
yes.
female athletes.
Yep.
So why are you positive and optimistic about that, but less optimistic about continuous lactate monitoring?
Okay, so this is actually based off of a really cool science study that is coming out of Caltech. And the paper is in Nature Nanotechnology, and it's called A Wearable Aptometer Nanobiosensor for Non-Invasive Female Hormone Monitoring. And so they created a monitor that's skin-based. It will likely be able to fit into a ring, like very similar to an Oura ring, that wow. looks at estradiol levels, which
that's
is
wild.
So cool.
Yeah, and so why are you positive about that though?
Because it's – so lactate is different because you can get that from a skin prick. Yeah. Continuous glucose monitoring you can get from like sticking a filament into the interstitial like fluid between like underneath the skin. But for estradiol, usually you have to go to a lab and do lab-based monitoring. And so there's not like an easy alternative to it. So I think a proxy for that is great when there's not a method that's like very, very, very minimally invasive.
Okay. I love that. Yeah. And the
does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. And the science is fascinating. So out of Caltech, it's all about, you know, nano monitoring and things like that. And the application of this technology, which is really complex and we're not going to get into, I think once we start thinking about how this applies to every single type of biomarker, we could be seeing a fundamental shift in how we think about physiology.
Oh, it's so cool. Yes. So I mean, for female athletes, it's amazing because there's so many athletes on IUDs. And often when you're on an IUD, you don't necessarily have the feedback of regular menstrual cycles with the bleed to understand where your hormonal markers are. And in this case, you could be on an IUD and have the estradiol measurement as a proxy. And I think that's so cool.
It's so cool. But also just think about outside of estradiol, if you can apply similar principles, which, you know, it's so robust and interesting.
Like theoretically, you can monitor testosterone. Like there's so many different things, cortisol, like so many different things that could be useful.
And maybe it goes beyond that even to some of the biomarkers that we're talking about in blood tests. And then you might be able to do things like think about, you know, blood volume sensors and, and all that. Maybe, you know, who knows, without cutting off your arm.
Yeah.
It's going to be awesome.
And then maybe you have a sensor that tells you your testosterone is 4,000. It's like our sleep tracker. It's like a sensor that just tells you you're great all the time.
All it reads is bam, bam. That's all it says. So that's our prediction. It's going to be wild. We'll keep you updated as things come out.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited to see the accuracy too. I think that's a big thing for me.
Yeah. Okay. Number two, this is my prediction. Super shoes on trails are going to become a much more revolutionary thing than they currently are. I think the next generation is destined to be the generation that flips the script, much like the original Nike Vaporfly did on roads back in, I believe, 2016. Right now, we're not there. Like the super shoes on trails, like they are just simply not anywhere close to the road versions. They don't have a fundamental difference. Like you are not falling behind yet if you're not using them. But I think some of the protos that athletes have been wearing at the elite level perhaps already are. I think that things like the Hoka Tecton 3, the Nike Ultrafly 2 are going to flip the script in what's possible.
Which is so exciting. My hot take actually is that it's much harder to design a super shoe for trails than it is for roads, just because there's so many biomechanical considerations of putting a carbon plate into a shoe when you're like on rocks, going down hills, like getting the shoe wet. And I'm curious to see how companies handle that.
But here's my hot take.
What?
I think companies overthink it.
Yeah, I agree.
In trail shoes in general.
Yeah.
I'm like all the time, just like, guys, why? You don't need, like, the trail shoe that's best is the trail shoe that's simple and the trail shoe that's fast as hell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we shouldn't have athletes being like, do I need to wear a road shoe on trails to feel fully comfortable and fully fast? Every single trail shoe over the course of its history seems like it gets more built up and more firm. And then they get a rock plate and then they get dual fiber propensity, whatever. You know, and I'm like, no, all we need is a really fast foam with some lugs on it. Similarly for the super shoes, yes, the carbon plate introduces some instability inherently.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
But all we need essentially is add a little bit of stability to that plate with a really fast foam and really simple lug structure. I think sometimes every single trail shoe morphs over time into a climbing claw. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, that's not important. And even on technical East Coast trails or whatever, it's actually not that helpful. So that's my hot take.
I like that hot take. Well, I think it's, I mean, it's a curious question of like, how do you design a trail shoe? Is there like, are the people that are designing a trail shoe, are they thinking of a specific trail as they go about doing that?
Yeah.
And like, how does that inform the evolution of the shoe? But like so many trails are so different. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't even care about that. I'm like, think about the fast, like this gets back to what we've been talking about with training. It's like, the whole thing is that you have a fast beast inside of you. And I think sometimes people are designing trail shoes being like, oh, trail runners are slow. It's like, fuck no. We need a shoe that is ready to go. Essentially, like the road performance trainers right now are all off the charts. Like they're all amazing shoes, whether it's the Hoka Mach X or, you know, some of the Nike models like the Zoom Fly or whatever. Give me some of those shoes with some lugs and we're good to go. We don't need you to rethink, you know, science every single time you do this. You're not going to get a Nobel Prize for your shoe design. All we want is a good road shoe with some lugs.
I love it. I actually got my first pair of super shoes and it's going to be like, you know, they say like new year, new whatever. It's going to be for me. The only new thing it's going to be is new year, new shoes.
It's going to be incredible.
I'm so excited for super shoes. I haven't worn them yet.
Yeah. I can't wait. It's going to change your
life. I got the Vaporfly. Yeah.
If anyone ever hasn't tried road super shoes, treat yourself. It worth it. It's worth it for doing some of your road workouts. You know, we always recommend a workout a week. You do this, you recover so much faster. Don't wear it for the warm up and cool down, just for the workout. You do that, you're going to get so many miles out of these shoes. I've gotten out of my AlphaFly 2s. AlphaFly 1s. I've gotten 400 miles now, and they're still performing way better than any of my other shoes. And they help me recover so much faster. So maybe the best thing you can do for your training is get yourself a pair of these and have fun with them.
Okay. I kind of understand what you're saying now about changing your shoes, because we did a workout together last week and we warmed up together. And then I usually like to go like take like a minute or two, and then I get like right into my workout. Meanwhile, you like to go inside. You like to take the trash. You like to change your shoes. It's like a whole different day by the time you're starting your workout.
Get exfoliated. Yeah, get the spa treatment. Yes.
Prime the GI system. Get the like revenge out of there.
Yeah.
But maybe it's all for your shoes. Maybe that makes sense now.
It does.
I know.
So I think almost every pro athlete does that. You need to have a little bit more chill between your warm up and your workout.
I know. I was like anxiously and excitedly awaiting my workout. And all of a sudden you come up the driveway walking, carrying the trash, like dragging the trash can. And I was like, oh man, motherfucker.
2024 is also the year where you slow your roll just a little bit.
I know. I've actually slowed my roll in everything except that liminal space between like the warm up and the workout.
You got the fastest baguette I've ever seen when it comes to that. Okay. Number three, elliptical sales go up.
Oh yeah. And same with like squat rocks and cross training equipment and gravel bikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's the year of just like getting gains from things other than running as like a supplement or for people that are injury prone. Yeah.
Yeah. Cross training is so good. Yeah. And we're big fans of it too.
It's our Parker Valby era.
Yes.
One of my athletes sent me that.
Okay. Next up, records are going to go down even more. This isn't the shoes that we're talking about. This is just saying, I think everyone is coalescing around the idea that the fastest athlete that you can be is also the best ultra athlete you can be. Mm-hmm. And the more we see that, the better it's going to be. I think we're going to see more road runners come to trails this year than ever before, inspired by people like Grayson Murphy, and Mika Boudon-Rousseau and Anna Gibson, and all of these athletes that are coming over and dominating with their speed. So got to get fast. And I think 2024, whatever pushback there has been on that has kind of faded away.
Pushback on being fast.
Yeah, I mean, there's been that all the time.
It's funny that there's pushback on being fast. Megan, it's like, why wouldn't you want to be fast?
You know, we talk about strides.
Yes.
When Swap started, Megan, I would get these like subtweets all the time about strides, being like, why are you even doing that? How is that relevant? And stuff like that from like prominent people. And I'm like, what?
Like, yeah, it's like go to the Olympics.
Yeah, the fastest people.
Watch people warm up. They'll put on strides. Yes.
Speed matters.
Yes. Yeah.
And we all have that within us. So make sure that no matter where you're at, you uplift your own speed and potential in that process.
Be your fastest unicorn possible.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Next up, Megan loved this one. It's that 2024 is the year of zone one.
Yes. Not just zone two. Sprinkle in all of the easy. No, I feel like if you can like increase that zone one volume a little bit, and it doesn't have to be at the expense of zone two volume, just add a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's going to help like mitochondria. It's going to help the body adapt. And I think it's actually going to fuel the speed gains counterintuitively.
So as a reminder, we're talking about a 5-zone model here. Zone one is very easy. Usually we refer to it as like 80% or less of your lactate threshold heart rate. So for me, we're talking under 138 heart rate. So that intensity level, it's so good for recovery and
also
adaptation.
It's so fun.
And sometimes you got to go really slow for it, but it makes everything else way better. You adapt better, you feel better. So embrace the zone one. It should probably be around half of your easy volume. If easy volume is 80% of your training, 50% of that 80% should probably be zone one, at least, even for, you know, beginner athletes. It's going to help you develop so much better.
And Z1's a vibe. Like on Z1 days, like you can take out the trash, you can go back down and take out the recycling, you can break down all of our cardboard boxes, and I'd be there for it.
Okay. another one from you. The fueling revolution continues.
Yes. It's like, let's get those. I mean, I feel like the carb revolution has certainly been here, and I think that's around to stay. I think protein revolution is just like, let's just fuel our bodies well. Yeah. And I feel like we're seeing like a lot of long-term adaptations, and also athletes performing like really well late into their 30s, earlier in their 40s and beyond. And I think that comes from well-fueled bodies.
It's the year of the substrate.
Oh, I love that.
The more substrate, the better.
Throw some tasty substrate on it.
And maybe that's what a lot of the science is showing, is essentially what we're doing now is having studies that measure what happens when you just have more substrate. Like protein isn't at the expense of carbs or fat. Mm-hmm. It's just a higher amount of, you know, total, like just across the day. And that's led to better performance. Similarly, more carbs have done that. Similarly, more fat improves aerobic metabolism and oxidation during activity, and fat metabolism is highly correlative with endurance performance. So I think we're just seeing throw some substrate in the fire.
I love that. Also, that'd be a great t-shirt. So I vetoed the food doping t-shirt that you designed. I was like, it's a little too edgy for us.
With the syringe putting out maple syrup onto pancakes.
Which is hilarious, but I don't know if we could sell that. But we could sell a more substrate t-shirt with just like pancakes stacked. It's not as good. Megan, I know.
The food doping shirt will be worth it. The whole point is that it's aggressive.
Okay, maybe it's a mug so people can have it within their houses, but they're not taking it out into the world.
No, shirt. Shirt. Also pants. You know how shirt pants used to say juicy across the back?
Uh-huh, I had those.
Yeah, you had juicy pants?
Actually, they weren't. They were like knockoff juicy. Okay. I got them at TJ Maxx, but they did say juicy across the butt.
Okay, maybe they can say syrupy.
Yeah, they said bam.
Perfect. Okay, a few more, or just two more. My big prediction, and this is a long shot prediction, is that UTMB Whistler folds.
Okay. I love that.
It doesn't happen.
Okay. You manifest your destiny.
It doesn't happen in 2025.
I think by saying that we're helping manifest it actually, which I think is a true point. I think that's gonna be hard.
Yeah.
Why? I've already had athletes ask, I mean, my athletes are like very aware of what's going on. I've had some athletes ask to do it, and to which I say no, actually, but I hope that's going to happen. I think it's going to be hard.
Okay. We'll see.
Yes.
I want everyone to be successful and happy and things like that. UTMB is going to be fine, right? No one's going to be put out of business if Whistler doesn't work. But I think they're either going to have to partner with Gary or one of the local.
Oh, I don't think Gary's going to partner with them.
Or something. Yes, something's going to have to happen. Yeah. Something's got to give.
Maybe we flip it and say, go do Gary Rappin's race.
Okay.
Yes. Go do local races. Okay. Support them.
I like it. You're trying to make it positive.
I'm trying to make it positive. Perfect. It's like, let's make this cup half full of substrate.
Okay. Do you have any other predictions for 2024?
Ooh, good question. I think skipping rest days is out.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're going to see a lot more athletes like taking care of their bodies, giving themselves substrate, like thinking about longevity in their futures. And I think it's going to help a ton.
What I really like there is at the end, other than the UTMB one, all of our like second half of our predictions were essentially saying, hey, the philosophy we spell is going to become more popular.
You know what? This content's for us.
Yeah. It's true. Yes. And also it's like, you know, we talk about, you got to love yourself. Like that's all life's about. That's all training's about. Anything we talk about is just about a path to self-acceptance and loving yourself. And what better way to do it to be like, here, the 2024 trend is me. What's in? You said out is skipping rest days. In, David, this unicorn.
Okay. But you know what's definitely going to be out?
What?
Being an asshole. Yeah, okay. I feel like 2024 is going to be like the year of kindness and like uplifting other people genuinely. And I don't know. I feel like given like 2023, I feel like that happened a lot in 2023, not ubiquitously. I think there's a lot of ways to go in the trail community, but.
Okay. Interesting. I think given that it's an election year.
Oh, true.
Interesting year to say that about, but maybe that is portending, you know, even political shift. Maybe we're talking a broader cultural
shift. Okay. That's
shift.
Not going to happen.
No. We are. Yeah. Megan, we need to give our listeners
That's even
hope.
Less likely than UTMB Whistler getting canceled.
We actually had a conversation that we're going to limit our political talk on here in general about like things that aren't.
Wait, why?
About like, I mean politics, like election.
Yes.
Like literally the election.
Okay.
If it's a topic that could be called political, a lot of times people will call a topic political when it's actually human rights or something like that.
Yes.
But election stuff, just because people know and hearing us say it might make them more stressed than they need to be in 2024.
Okay.
Because like personally, I've had to take a step back from any of the, you know, catastrophic predictions and things of the world in November 2024 or whatever, or January 2025, because it's not good for my mental health and makes me kind of curl up into a little turtle ball. So we're going to hope to, you know, we're going to be here for you. We're going to be loving and accepting and kind and talk about issues that matter, but not so much talk about politicians.
Okay, well, let's take that little like turtle ball that you've curled up into and cannonball into the human rights pool as well as like the environmental pool, and we can like swirl our cannonballs in there.
I love it.
Yes.
And so, you know, to point out something that is not political, that's just rights, and you know, we have a lot of new listeners to the podcast over time. It's, you know, trans athletes' rights are human rights.
Yes.
And that needs to be at the forefront of all we do. And it's been a rough go for the last year, and we do want to send so much love to everyone that's been dealing with that, which I think is the whole community. It's quite sad. But, you know, this is the year, I think, that people are going to start coming around to the fact that like letting people live a fully embodied experience doesn't harm anyone. And it's just good. So maybe that's the prediction to end on, is that, you know, this is the year of love and acceptance as it relates to inclusion in sports.
I love that. And collectively taking like big freaking cannonballs into human rights pools, because yes. Why not? It's like the best way, I feel like, to uplift other people.
Awesome. Okay. Do you want to, God, we're probably ready to get on to secrets and hot takes.
Let's do it.
Should we do this study or save it for next week?
Let's save it for next week. Cause okay. I have, you put this in here and it's kind of following up on a discussion that we've had in prior weeks. And I think it's going to be a little hot debate.
Okay. A hot debate.
Yeah.
It's on AI and the medical providers. We're not going to tease any of that debate now.
And actually I'll just tease what sides we're on. It's probably pretty obvious. David is on the side of like pro AI.
Yes. I like the machines.
Yeah. David wants to fuck the machines.
Always.
I want to fuck the doctors.
Yeah.
And that's our sides. Yeah. I believe in like healthcare professionals. David wants to be, actually you don't even go to a doctor. So like you just ask ChatGPT your medical stuff.
Yeah. Well, what I'm thinking about is earlier we called, you know, protein version, virgin present. I wonder if AI and all of that existed when I was in high school, would I be protein? Not quite.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I could say present. It's like off on a technicality. Maybe. But we love talking about AI because this is the future. Like, as the reason it keeps coming up is not because, you know, it's just our own interest. I think if you don't see how the world is fundamentally changing mm-hmm. underneath our feet, we're destined to get run over by it. And AI is changing that, changing it in the medical field. It's changing it in sports. It's going to be changing it in some of these training methods we mentioned. It's wild.
And even though I love healthcare professionals and like I have definite bias there too, AI, I'm like so pro AI. I love using AI in different ways, but we'll still have a hot debate on this.
Megan, the machines aren't listening. You don't need to say, oh, I'm so pro AI. I throw it in just as like a little bit of a disclaimer in case Skynet comes for us all. And you're like, you know what, guys, I shouldn't be a part of the human apocalypse because like I said you were cool after I insulted you.
Well, you should go through my ChatGPT history and be like, okay, she's pro AI.
Oh, yeah. I love it so much. Okay, on to hot takes and secrets. We're going to just kind of mix things up in the future with secrets listeners sent in, hot takes, things like that.
Actually, let's start with secrets first and then we'll go to hot takes. Oh. And then we'll go to listener corner. So we'll have like a bam, bam, bam lineup consistently going That's forward. Okay. I like it.
Okay, I'm going to read the first one. You bolded this, so...
Which is a secret. I'll read it.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, when I first moved to Boulder, I hadn't yet mapped out public bathroom access for any running routes. Early one morning, I was running along Marshall Road and had to poop so, so very bad, and I saw a porta potty next to this big industrial-looking building. Alas, the porta potty was locked, but I was in such dire need that I decided I would just poop behind the porta potty and make haste. I slowly creep out from behind the porta potty, and of course, there is someone in a big truck in the parking lot with the headlights on. Essentially, he started yelling at me to not use this private porta potty, and I told him I didn't want to use it because it was locked. Then I strutted the fuck out of there because I didn't want to wait and see if he figured out what I meant. I still get anxiety running by this place today out of fear he will recognize me. I call this my personal poopgate story.
Okay, amazing.
This is so great.
Every runner's been there, probably to this particular porta potty.
Oh yeah, actually for me, like as I get closer and closer, and I can start to see the vault of the porta potty, it's like there's something in my brain that's like, release all the fluids. Does that ever happen to you? Like just seeing a bathroom or seeing a porta potty and it's like there is no other option but to release fluids.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm slapping what you just said. So it doesn't happen to me so much. It does a little bit with pee maybe, but where it does happen, I think, is to other men at urinals. Yeah. This is something women don't know about, to talk about like...
I know. I actually just like want to go into a men's bathroom to just experience
pee
the vibe.
All over the floor.
No, it's like we've talked about the fact that like a sauna is an ecosystem. Uh-huh. The men's bathroom seems like even more of one.
Puddles everywhere. Like our aim is so much easier, right? Like it's not a hard thing to do.
Actually, I don't know. My aim's gotten pretty good.
Your aim is great.
Yeah. I think we just need to practice.
But you're 99.9th percentile. You have privilege when it comes to urethral aim. But men, not so much. So this listener, I think they do point out a societal injustice I want to fight against.
What?
Locked porta potties.
Oh, yeah.
No porta potty should ever be locked.
Like, actually, it should be. If this guy has a secret porta potty and his truck is there with the lights on, I don't want any person, especially any woman, to go into that porta potty.
Oh, of course you got to be in that porta potty.
Oh, that scares it. That's like the start of a murder mystery.
No, Megan, that's the best one.
Yeah, that's why I poop in the wild. I'm like, porta potties are just a murder mystery.
No.
Megan. Especially at 5 a.m.
Oh, come on. No one wants the gold coin. Everyone wants the buried treasure. This is the treasure map. It is in that porta potty. We've got to use it. If you lock your porta potty, you deserve whatever you get. In fact, I think that's an act of aggression that should be punishable in a human rights violation at The Hague itself.
Also, is there a such thing as a private porta potty?
Private? Yeah, they're all private.
I mean, no such, there's by extension, no porta potty is private.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a porta potty, it is like a public like area at that point.
Yeah. No, you could have portable bathrooms in your house.
Yeah, I mean, but that's like anywhere. Inside your house. Yeah, that's different.
But it's still a porta potty. Megan, you're fighting with a lawyer here.
that's actually
you have
fair.
No chance.
Yeah, you're right. I just dug myself a hole. Yes, that I'm going to squat in.
Score one for the protein virgin. Okay, next thing. This is a hot take. Permanently remove the quote fitness trend metric from Strava. It's impossible to interpret and seemingly has no connection to reality.
Do you ever look at it?
Well, it only applies if you have heart rate on your runs. Mm. That's the only time it accumulates the fitness trend.
And actually, the hard part about me is sometimes my heart rate is pretty inaccurate. And so I don't upload it. Yeah. And so it depends. I feel like for me, it's just like hit or miss based off of what heart rates I update.
Yeah. I mean, I don't look at it at all. I think that there's better metrics. I think even the things on your watch are probably a little bit better, mm-hmm. but those don't account for vert and things like that.
Yeah. I think none of these metrics are particularly great, to be honest with you. The best metric is between your 2 years.
Oh.
What your brain tells you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That being said, though, actually,
where the good Lord split you.
Yeah. Actually, that being said, I logged into Strava because I was like, I literally never looked at mine. I actually had to go like find it on the software like web app, and I found it, and it told me I'm back to peak fitness.
Oh,
yeah,
very cool.
So it peaked like August 3rd, and my last Strava title at that point was Mitochondrial Girl Summer.
Yeah,
and then I got like 4 viruses, got pericarditis in my heart, and it took a huge crater, and now I'm back up.
There was so much hope.
I know.
This podcast is always full of so much hope every single week.
Yeah.
And then we see what happens.
Uh-huh. And then it just craters.
It's tough. Yeah. And then when I did the 50 miler, my fitness like tripled on the Strava metric.
Oh, interesting.
Just from that effort. Yeah. And now it's going way back down. But I think there is a place for better fitness metrics mm-hmm. with the help of AI, because there's no reason that you should have to have heart rate, or you can't do a vert run, or you can't do a technical run, for these systems to understand where it might incorporate into training stress that goes beyond just saying that you did a certain number of hours of training, or you had a certain, you know, pace on flat ground run relative to heart rate. Like, I think there's a place for this stuff to get very smart, very interesting. And I imagine that some of these training apps like Training Peaks are starting to work on that stuff. And I can't wait to see where it goes. Strava should be more equipped than anyone to really harness the power of data and how data correlates with outcomes.
And I think the thing is like these metrics and predictions are only as good as the data that you feed into them. And I think like the challenge with Strava is just that for us and probably for a lot of people, it doesn't contain the full scope of the full data set that you need. Yeah. And I think they're doing the best they can with the metrics they have.
But there's so much they could do.
Yes,
and
they
I'm
could
excited
do a lot.
To hear where
yes,
it goes.
Yep.
Okay, let's do 2 more because they're both great. This is a secret. Last summer, I ran a trail race that consisted of 5 loops. During the first loop, I somehow missed one of the turns to get to an aid station. I think that error would have added maybe a tenth of a mile or so to the race. On the next loop, I noticed where I made the mistake, and I made it to the aid station, where one of the volunteers asked me why I hadn't checked in on the first loop. I panicked. Instead, I ran past it because it was so dark and rainy, and I didn't need any refills or fuel. I lied and felt bad the rest of the race, and I didn't save the run on my watch because I thought someone on Strava would notice I had skipped part of it.
Oh, that's hard.
Isn't that
actually
a great secret though?
Also, my heart goes out because it's like, I feel like we've all in trail races been in this place where we're like, where does the course go? We're all trying to do our best.
Or did I cut part of it?
Yeah. Like, oh, it's like, I've had moments of deep anxiety out there on the trail being like, where's the ribbon, or did I cut? And it's really hard.
My thing, if it's not intentional and you didn't take anything from anybody.
Yeah.
Don't sweat it. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Also, different if this is like a 2 mile race versus a 100 mile race, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think all of the shit gets back to intention.
Yeah. I mean, it's like they didn't mean to do this.
You know what they were doing?
What?
Euro style.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And cutting the switchbacks.
And Chamonix, you know, I was going for some segments out there. And what I realized is segments absolutely impossible unless you cut switchbacks.
Yeah.
You cut switchbacks. It's like the easiest thing of all time sometimes.
And it was the first time in our life we ever cut switchbacks.
Yeah,
because like, I can't mentally do that. But in Europe, it raised my testosterone levels so high because I was like, every time I did it, I was like, huzzah.
Literally everything in Europe, every switchback becomes a cut trail. And it's
which is actually probably really bad for the trail.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably complicated. I mean, there's a reason that they do it.
Yeah.
But similarly, this guy was just cutting a little mid-race switchback. It's totally fine. Don't beat yourself up. Right now, wherever you're holding a secret like this, where you fuck something up, either intentionally or not, you lied, a little white lie that became a little bit bigger, forgive yourself.
I love that.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we all lie sometimes.
Yeah, I love it. Don't take revenge.
I actually lied to you this weekend.
Wait. Oh, yes. You have to tell a story because it's great.
Okay. So I have a thing where
Also, as you're doing this, you're like rubbing my knee right now.
We're almost done the podcast.
Yeah. So. I like this. Like every time you lie, you just like stroke me.
So Megan couldn't find her phone and we had to be somewhere. So it was kind of a big deal.
And I was like wandering all around the house and I was like, oh, I'm just like such a mess. Why is this happening to me?
And so I go in and I grab something for Leo. And in the process, I find her phone. And so I give it to her. And I was like, oh, your phone was in the laundry room, you know, implying you dumb bitch. And then we went, we picked up Megan's mom, her amazing, amazing mom. And while we're there, I just had to let her know, actually, your phone was in my pocket the whole time.
Okay, here's the thing. I knew you lied.
I know you knew.
I know, because my phone was clearly not in the laundry room. I had looked there twice and like it wasn't a spot that I put it. And I was like, when you came and said that, I was like, there's no way.
But I unleashed it for the perfect comedic timing.
I loved it. So actually, remember, it was great. Yeah.
But for everyone out there, like, you know, like whether you do it intentionally or not, whether it's a joke or not, open up to people. Like, I think when you tell people that, hey, there's this thing that I've lied about or I've told a mistruth about, or it was accidental or it was intentional, I think almost always people will have compassion for that because everyone does it. It's not a question of your character or anything like that, unless it's a pathological thing that you use to hurt people. Like, it's just part of being a human living in these sentient brains. So give yourself a lot of love for wherever you've done that in your life, because we all have that in our history and in our present.
Also, it feels good to just like unburden yourself.
Yes.
And I feel like that's what actually our hope was with the secrets episode last week, is that people could just unburden themselves by sharing. And actually, it seems like it worked, because we got a lot of great responses from people who shared secrets and we talked about them. And it seemed like the process was maybe helpful.
You know the best place to unburden yourself?
What?
Behind a private porta potty on Marshall Road in Boulder. Okay, last one here. This is a self-promotional one, but a listener teed it up and we're going to knock it out of the park. A year of swap on Patreon at the huzzah level will do so much more for your health, fitness, and happiness than an annual Training Peaks premium subscription, and it costs less. I feel like a suck up / ass kisser for writing that, but I love you and all that you do. And as a metrics junkie, I only speak the truth.
Aw, this means the world.
I like that you didn't have this in bold. You didn't want me to read this one, but I'm reading it, Megan, because I'm doing the Lord's work, which is promoting our Patreon. Patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P. There we do bonus podcasts every week, 30 minutes of questions and answers. We get nitty gritty on training details, on life, on everything like that. It's a lot more direct of an episode, but we also do posts on science, on other things that we find interesting. And we're really going to expand that this year. So patreon.com/swap, also a great community there.
Also, I love that our 30-minute episodes have just become 35 minutes consistently, because it's our date.
Yeah.
It's really fun. We just want to extend it.
It's so good.
It's like closing down an ice cream shop when the lights are closed. We're like, we're just going to talk an extra 5 minutes.
You know what else is great?
What?
John G.
Oh, I love John G.
Our ads are so weak sauce today.
No, they're not.
Well, you know what's not weak sauce?
What?
John G.
John G. John G is great. Okay. They're 3-inch shorts. When you're lifting, you can see like every muscle fiber activating.
Yeah.
It's like, as I do these chin-ups, I'm like, what muscle fibers am I using in my legs to do a chin-up? And the answer is all of them.
You're really into mirrors when you lift.
It's awful. You gotta look at your form. Gotta look at your butt.
You are so into mirrors. It's like the one time, like, you're so humble and everything in life. The one time
I actually never look at it in a mirror. Like, literally, like, there could be stuff on my face all day. But then when I do strength training, I'm like sticking my butt in the air like flexing my biceps.
I'll sometimes catch and you're like, you won't have a camera or anything. You won't think I'm in the room, and you'll be turned around, like looking over your shoulder at the mirror. And I'm like, you an Instagram influencer right now? Are you trying to influence the mirror?
No, I'm trying to sell John G to the mirror.
Okay.
Yeah. They want those 3-inch shorts.
So John G, amazing gear. It has like just been so fun to have this stuff on board this
year. You've been wearing the Zephyr Runner jacket and it looks great on you. And it's like, actually, my sister the other day was like, you didn't buy that jacket, did you? And it was because it was too nice for you to be in possession of.
Yeah. So JohnG.com, at JohnG.com, use code SWAP, S-W-A-P, for 15% off. A really cool company that we love so much. And we'll be doing some fun things with them this year, maybe some giveaways and things for Patreon.
Oh, I'm so excited about that.
They gave us a good opportunity for that.
So. We've never done giveaways in our life.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing on Patreon. We're going to be doing a lot of giveaways. Precision is going to be doing $1,000 giveaway this year.
Damn.
John G is going to be doing $1,000 giveaway. We're going to have a lot of that. We're going to spread out the love and also give away some of our own swap gear.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, on to listener corner. I recently moved out / separated with my partner of 12 years. And wow, I'm living on my own apartment for the first time in my life. Y'all are keeping me company while I navigate this new adventure. I listen to Swap while I cook on my own, clean my beautiful new space, and just generally get used to having more time alone. It's nice to have you two on my speakers. Thanks for filling my new living alone adventure with lots of joy and hill strides.
Oh, heck yes. Yeah. This is amazing. Also, we said this in the last week's episode, is that I've worked with a lot of athletes that have like been in relationship flux, and seeing them find their stride again, whether that's like in a few months, a few years, 10 years, it's so cool and so empowering, and we're so here for it.
This athlete's finding their hill stride.
Oh, I love it. Okay, also question for you.
Uh-huh.
It says 9 in all caps, and you said 12 years. Was that like a reading error, or do you know something I don't know?
No, Megan, I was trying to make it fully anonymous.
Oh, so you changed the years?
So you just gave it away.
Okay, there's probably so many people that have been out of a relationship for 9 years.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how close they were. Like, maybe they listened to the same podcast together.
Okay, well, okay, I love what you're doing for I can't even say that word.
Anonymity.
Anonymity, yes.
We're even. These got me on the medical terms. I'm getting you on, like, the lawyer terms.
It's really hard to say I can't even do it.
Yeah, but 9 years, you know, to get to the actual number is a really long time. And, you know, I think that these chapters in our lives, these eras, they really do, you know, define that period of time in such a beautiful and meaningful way. So remember that those 9 years are still awesome.
Oh, yes.
Even if the next 9 years look different.
Yeah. And a relationship that ends is not a failed relationship. You say that all the time, and it's one of my favorite quotes.
Yeah. And so what I want to end up with actually is last night when you went to bed, I was looking at this article on the James Webb Telescope, and
as you do,
a bunch of new pictures came out. It sounded like I said nude pictures. Nude pictures of the galaxies.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine of like aliens? That'd be great.
Yeah. And so just a reminder to start 2024 that I needed for myself, which is if you hold a pin up to the night sky, just that little pinprick at the very, very top, and you zoom in far enough with this James Webb Telescope, you'll see 45, 50,000 galaxies behind it. And that's just in the visible light that we can see. Each of those containing hundreds of billions of stars for the most part. The world is so big. And I think in that bigness, there's so much liberation and a reminder that we're all in this together. Hug your loved ones, hug people you don't love. Let's try to have 2024 be the year of love.
Oh, and in that bigness, in like magnitude, is also chorizo. Because oh. I love, there was once actually like a pretty well-known astronomer that took a picture of chorizo and said it was part of the James Webb Telescope photos.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I thought that was hilarious because so many people believed him. So it's the year of galaxies and chorizo that looks like galaxies.
Yeah. But then asterisk, even as you know all this, it's okay to get revenge.
Yeah.
Let's all mount up with the juiciest revenge.
Oh, yeah. Huzzah.
Huzzah.